I didn't realize I was wasting $415 a month until I downloaded Rocket Money. I thought I had my finances under control until the app laid out all my spending and categorized it for me. Takeout, shopping, and unused subscriptions were quietly draining my account. And as a result, my savings took a backseat. But Rocket Money doesn't just tell you what you're wasting money on. It takes action to save you money. First, the app looks at your income and monthly expenses and calculates how much you can safely spend each day to stay under budget. Rocket Money also finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions for you and even negotiates better rates on your bills, so you have more money in your pocket. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. It's time to simplify your finances and take control of your money. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Hello and welcome to Contemplations. I'm here with Josh today.
Hello.
And we will be discussing intelligence and what that is, because there is an ongoing debate about different definitions and different conceptions of intelligence. And it is actually like a very lively field in which it's not really clear what's more accurate or what's less accurate. Or maybe it is, but then you're going to tell us something about that. And we'll see what comes out of it, whether there is such a thing as intelligence and what is the meaningful definition and like conception of it.
So I imagine everyone's familiar with an IQ test, and people might point to the fact that, you know, the IQ test is a very reliable test. Well, intelligence must be whatever this measures, right? Mm-hmm. But of course, the kind of questions you get in an IQ test are quite often quite analytical and very focused on specific competencies. And it might be a more broadly encompassing concept, intelligence, and many psychologists have looked at intelligence in a more broad way than the IQ test. And I think it certainly seems to look at things like your problem-solving ability, some degree of numerical competency, and some degree of analytical competency. But it's all very niche stuff, I suppose. And it is a useful test in its own right. But there are lots of other ways of thinking about it beyond that kind of very reliable but also narrow test of intelligence.
Yeah, I know that people who actually are into it and are researching it, they kind of often squirm when people use IQ and intelligence interchangeably. It's like, no, don't do that, please. There's other things to consider. Yeah.
There's a much broader kind of spectrum of human competencies that I think encompasses intelligence. And we'll see that also in lots of theories, that the kind of things that kind of test would measure is only, I don't know, a small fraction of it and not really
all encompassing. But also, that doesn't mean that the IQ or the IQ test is like meaningless or anything like that.
I think it's a very useful tool. Yeah. And the fact that people can take it twice and get more or less the same score is a good indicator that it's measuring something real and tangible and objective that is an intrinsic part of a human being, but it's just how we define what that is. But nevertheless, of course, to move on to the actual debate, which has been going on in psychology for past 120 years or so. So it's been very long running, but also there is, outside of academia and psychology in general, there's a debate just in society as well. Like, our understanding of intelligence has changed over time. I haven't really focused on the history of that, more the stuff I'm familiar with, the psychology, believe it or not. So who would have thought?
So it's like all the debate, well, I'm not book smart, but I'm street smart.
Yeah, that sort of, that kind of mentality, where there's the term street smart, of course, has been around for quite a while, but It's come about from this kind of debate in a kind of colloquial domain, I suppose. So, of course, you may be wondering, well, if intelligence is something that you have and you can't really change, well, we have a rough idea of what it is, but why should we even be concerned about how to define it?
But you just mentioned a very interesting thing. Do you think it can't be changed, or it can be changed, or are you going to talk about that later?
I'm going to talk about it later, but give a little bit of a spoiler, I think there is a large amount of it that is intrinsic to you that can't really be changed, both in psychology, we tend to separate things into your biology and your environment. Mm-hmm. But also, and obviously, there's an environment, there's a biological component that's undeniable, and also your environment as well. But I think the interesting thing to talk about in this kind of foreshadowing discussion before I get onto the more biological stuff is that even your environment, like your upbringing when you're a child, probably dictates a decent amount of it, your education and things like that, and your parents or your carers or what have you's approach to teaching you things shapes the environmental side of things a lot. So you don't particularly have that much agency over it.
So by the time that you get to know what intelligence is and get to be interested in it and have your own kind of thoughts about it, by that time, most of the forming and whatever it could influence is already over.
But it's also not a waste of time either, because as you get older, your different competencies change and you can actually learn to think in more intelligent ways, however you define that. But your approach to how you think about things and how you understand things obviously changes. Otherwise, learning anything would be a waste of time, wouldn't it? There'd be no use in any information if you couldn't apply it and in a way in which either betters your own aims or whatever your goals are.
So that also means that intelligence is not the same thing as kind of being well-read or being or wisdom or something like that. It's not, that's not the same thing, because otherwise, like, learning wouldn't be any point in it, right? And like that whole,
I don't doubt that there's some degree of overlap with those.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
But it's one of those things that we're trying to define colloquial terms that are very difficult to operationalize and study. Like, how would you define wisdom to even be able to study it? It's like, well, it's kind of not meant to, it's not intended to be used in that way, is it? It's not just like, this is exactly what this wisdom points to.
And I don't know, it's easier to define wisdom, that's old age charisma. Yeah.
There we go. Should be a psychologist.
It's a very scientific way to portray it.
So yeah, obviously everyone wants to develop their intelligence, especially in a world where, you know, we're becoming increasingly reliant on it. It seems like as time's going on, society seems to select for intelligence more and more, whatever that may be, but you just need more cognitive ability.
So that you'd say that in the past, other traits would be also valued as much or maybe more even?
Yeah, I mean, if you were working on a farm, physical strength would be very important, for example, and you don't necessarily need to be able to solve quadratic equations when you're bringing in the wheat for the harvest.
But maybe strength is just physical intelligence.
Well, there is actually an argument about that, but we shall get onto that later. Obviously, to be able to develop intelligence in a well-rounded way, you need to be able to define it in a way that is useful. Otherwise, you may miss certain aspects and it might limit your growth. This is purely from a pragmatic view, but obviously there are other interpretations, but I don't want to dwell on it too much. So it's probably better to choose one of these interpretations that I'm going to present, one that you think is particularly accurate or just a useful way of characterizing it. It may not be completely correct, but quite often you can use these theories as a cognitive tool to think about intelligence in a way that will give you good benefits.
So do you think it's worth like doing that with each of those the definitions or conceptions of intelligence, or is it more useful for an individual to like choose one that they feel like fits the best and then just like roll along with it?
Well, it's obviously worth bearing in mind all of the different theories, because they were developed with some considerable amount of information kind of put into it. They're not just pulling it out of a hat, just like, you know what, I think it's this, and this. They're going kind of bottom up, okay, I want to look into what we colloquially call intelligence. How is this made up? What does it encompass? That sort of thing.
That's what I wanted to mention as well, because we briefly discussed it before we started recording, that these ideas or theories of intelligence are not really something where someone would sit down and say, well, I know people, what are they like? You know, they're like smart in this way, and then they will try to justify it by looking at the data. But it's the other way around, is, as you said, bottom up, right? Mm-hmm. So, which means that you look at a lot of data and you look at, you know, correlations and things that stand out from the data. And then from that, you try to give a name to something that you see that is real, but you don't yet know what it is.
Yeah, that sounds perfectly reasonable to me.
Yep. Okay. I didn't know if you wanted to add anything to that from like a methodological point of view, but like you don't need to go into too many details, of course, because that's like...
I think the methodology side of things, I'm kind of avoiding it because I do obviously know the kind of inner workings of it, but yeah, it's not particularly interesting to discuss unless you're kind of invested in research methodology like I am, and you kind of enjoy developing your knowledge of that. And I imagine that I'm in a very small minority there. It's not particularly interesting. What people want to know about is the results, what they can take away and what they can apply to their own life, rather than how can I be a better scientist? Because I think maybe one or two of you might be interested, but I want to cast a bit of a broader net than that. But anyway, moving on to the simplest definition. Mm-hmm. It's the one from the Oxford Dictionary. Obviously, this isn't developed by bottom-up data collection and stuff like that. This is just the colloquial usage, but it's still a useful way of looking at it. So they say the ability to learn, understand, and think in a logical way about things, the ability to do this well.
And so this is a definition. So it's not a theory of intelligence. This is just the conception of, I feel like that's what it
this
is.
This is the dictionary definition of it. I find it interesting in particular that they say think in a logical way, because that's a very specific understanding of intelligence. I mean, what about creativity? I think there's got to be a certain amount of intelligence that informs that. But creativity, is that necessarily logical? Well, Is it for the people at Oxford English Dictionary to determine that question? Well, they've picked a side here unwittingly, but I think it's somewhat unusual that they've been so specific here that they said logical. Obviously, I think being able to think logically is an aspect of intelligence, sure, but is it a defining feature of it?
So do you think that they chose this definition, including the word logical, because they were trying to reflect how people understand the meaning in a colloquial sense?
It could be.
Or is it something
yeah.
like a deeper meaning that they were like, yeah, I think that there's something to it, but they just might...
I mean, it's difficult to speculate why they chose to do it, but I just thought it was interesting and unusual that they would pick such a specific aspect of it to use in their definition. But so do you think that the criticisms are fair of that? Because, of course...
Yeah, I mean, like we're going to get into the theory and different theories of intelligence, which include things that aren't necessarily based in logic, and like different types of intelligence where logic plays a minor role. So making it something prominent and making it the only distinctive feature in that definition is kind of singling it out.
Well, they also talk about learning and comprehension as well, which are, of course, things that are related to intelligence as well. Intelligent people can learn more easily. I think that's pretty much a given to most people. I mean, it's how people would colloquially define intelligence well.
Like, but is it like that with IQ tests, for example? Is the IQ test about learning?
It's not particularly, although you can learn how to do it in a better way and get a better score.
Like if you repeat it many times, right? But if you're doing it for the first time, I mean, most people haven't done it even once.
And it's more about it's very centered on your cognitive abilities, and there's things like rotating shapes mentally and how they would rotate, and predicting numerical patterns and things like that. It reminds me of a maths paper at school. That's what my kind of takeaway was. But kind of weird and, I don't know, not very theoretical.
That's what I was interested in, because you said that learning is pretty much part and parcel of all kinds of theories of intelligence. But then I was thinking of the IQ test, that's not so much about learning, especially when people only take it once.
It's the colloquial understanding of intelligence, isn't it? And I agree
yeah. with you on the colloquial side, of course. Like that's what
I also think it is, but there are theories that exclude it to some extent as well. But anyway, I think we should actually get on to these theories.
Yeah,
so the very first attempt to understand intelligence was by Sir Francis Galton, who was an English, I guess, scientist is the word, although it seems a bit unusual to use that term. And he was a cousin of Charles Darwin, which feeds into some of his theories. He was an early adopter of the theory of evolution. And as we can see from this theory in a second, he kind of misunderstands it a little bit. Okay. So Galton believed that quickness was an evolutionary advantageous attribute that would be a good indication of general mental ability. And by that, he defined intelligence as reaction time.
So it would be something like adaptability or like better said or something.
Better reactions. That's literally all he looked at.
Oh, so like physical reactions to stimuli. Yeah.
So like if you drop something, how quickly could someone grab it? And you could drop a ruler and then where your fingers land on the ruler depends how quick your reaction times were.
So as you get older, you get dumber.
Apparently, according to Galton. Yeah, but
because your reaction time obviously slows down a lot with age, right? So people that play FPS games when they're like 15, they're really good at it because their reaction time is almost zero, right? But if you get a 40-year-old person, they just can deal half a second before every command.
Yeah, so obviously this is nonsense, right?
Yep.
I don't think anyone really needs to defend this theory.
See, I was trying to be more charitable to him to interpret it as adaptability, you know, to like quickness in like how to adapt to what's happening around you.
Well,
but he wasn't like that, so.
Yeah, well, obviously there's a practical element to it where he's saying, okay, well, this is just how I can measure it, right? But this is an example of how
literally with the
definitions,
ruler.
Yeah, definitions can be very niche, misleading, and not really characterize things in a way that is useful, and that is mainly what I'm trying to get out of this. But something that is just
funny to imagine, you know, like the question, how intelligent are you? Well, 30 centimeters.
I don't think they'd get a very good score on an IQ test there. So moving on to one that is actually useful to think of, this was developed in 1904, so we're going back quite a ways, and it's quite impressive that it's still something that's worth considering today, especially in psychology, which is quite a young science.
I know that you talked about a lot of different things in psychology, and so that doesn't happen often in psychology, right? That something would survive for 120 years and still be like relevant or useful or like a starting point for something more.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, most of the time, even going back to the 80s is a little bit... particularly with modern neuroscientific research, you can kind of rely on that a lot more because there's less moving parts in that. I know that sounds counterintuitive, but just from an experimental design
you can isolate well.
You can isolate the different aspects or variables of something far more easily because you have a physical reading of the brain where everything is going on. But nevertheless, that is a tangent. What I wanted to talk about was Spearman's kind of theory of general intelligence, often referred to as G. And Charles Spearman, of course, developed this in 1904, as I said, after observing that children who do well in one school subject often do well in others. Mm-hmm. And I think this is a fair observation that still holds true even today, that there are children and adults that have a competency in a wide array of things, more so than other people, and there must be something that is behind this. There's obviously a reason that one of them is better than the other.
It's not that either you'd be good at nothing or at everything. Mm-hmm. It's that when you're really good at a few things, you're more likely to be very good at other things as well. And that's what you have to explain by referring to something else that you haven't identified yet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
that's what he calls G.
Yes. Yep. Yep. So how did he kind of develop his theory? He did something known as a factor analysis, which examines the association between different variables to isolate how many factors may be influencing them. And this is a mathematical thing.
Yep.
It's using tests of correlation and association and things like that. So factors that correlate 100% with one another are probably measuring the same thing. Well, almost certainly they are.
Mm-hmm.
And say two different things, maybe music and art correlated 90%. Then you could be it's pretty safe to assume, okay, maybe they are relatively related to one another. So maybe they share a common factor informing both of them. But this is just me using an example. This isn't necessarily...
So it tells you, like, just checking whether I understand correctly. So when you're when you perform this factor analysis and the result is too low, it means that these things are completely unrelated and they can't be explained by anything common. But if they're too high, it means you're not really observing different things, but it's the same thing. So it's somewhere in the middle. You can see that there's some relation which can be explained by something else, which you identify as being there by performing that analysis.
Yeah.
Yep.
So obviously Spearman's factor analysis concluded that all of the subjects were related. So he didn't have, they weren't all completely unrelated from one another.
Mm-hmm.
It kind of, his figure would have lied somewhere in the middle, right? Yep. They wouldn't have all been, well, they could have all been related to one another, but I imagine that's unlikely. I imagine it would be somewhere sort of in the middle.
To watch the full video, please become a premium member at lotuseaters.com.